Merry Christmas, dickhead.
Okay, so welcome back to Meat for the Beast.
Episode 7!
Oh shit, son!
Who thought we'd get this far?
The festive treat we've fought hard to bring to you.
Yeah, Christmas special. We'll bring in some bells later to make it a bit more realistic. But yeah, we've got some festive shit to talk about.
Amen. Now I was wanting to kick off with a high five to McVeigh for... McVeigh gets some shit for his recommendations now and again, but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, high five.
Bam!
Yeah,
I was fucking right on that, wasn't I?
It was good, it was great.
Ninja Turtles is mint as fuck.
I really enjoyed it, because I had a kind of shit week in Brighton. So I went down to Brighton and the weather was awful. And
you're there with your wife and child. it's not going to be fun.
To be fair, it's not the best place to take... one-year-old.
No,
you know,
I can imagine.
It's probably a good place to go in your 20s if you like drugs and having a good time. But it was a really nice place. It was good walking around Brighton, but the weather was shit, which didn't help. So the highlight of the week was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And it's an excellent film.
Yeah.
It's in terms of my let's go to a Ninja Turtles film to watch, it's on a par. I'm not even going to put it second. It's my on a par with the original 1990 version. It's fucking awesome. And I can't wait for it to be coming out on Blu-ray.
It would, because I did watch the original film recently. And it is, through adult eyes, it looks very rushed. And it's more of a kind of, it's quite a real fun nostalgic watch for me. Because all the arcade machines in the film, like, there's bits where kid like teenagers are playing on arcade machines. There's like Narc.
But it's badass, man. It's by Golden Harvest, who dished out the fucking kung fu films from forever.
Right, okay.
Golden Harvest produced this shit. And actually, what's that documentary on Netflix? The Ninja Turtle, I can't remember what it's called.
I don't know either, but...
We've both watched it. There's a documentary that's awesome, and I think it's probably some sort of Kickstarter deal.
Yeah.
But that documentary... That shed a whole bunch of light on the Ninja Turtles franchise from its birth.
Interviews
with Eastman and Laird, the growth of the project, and how it became the biggest thing in the world.
And
there's talks in that of how they, it's like, how can we get this made? And it's like, oh, we want to do this, we want to do that. And then they got some arty British dude who signed up with the fucking kung fu dudes over in...
It was the guy who made the Aha video, you know,
Take on me. What's he got, Stuart Baird?
I think so.
I'm going to go with Stuart Baird.
With the kind of illustrated look and it's all a bit comic book, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And that guy got the Ninja Turtles. And then Jim Henson's Workshop gets in.
Yeah.
Despite its flaws, it's a pimp piece of fucking awesome badassery.
Still a good watch.
Excellent stuff.
Now, that sounds a bit fucked on the DVD for some reason. It's got like a really basic sound to it. Like it's barely stereo.
I don't know, man. I've not watched it since I got an HD telly, which is only a few weeks back.
I'm sure there's a better Blu-ray version out there. But we'll have to
I'd like a remastered version of that. The Secret of the Ooze is alright, but Turtles in Time, I'd quite happy never see that again. That was dog shit.
Turtles in Time, I don't know. Is that three?
No, that's the third one. It's dog shit. They go back to fucking Shogun era Japan, it's dog shit.
I remember being on one summer holiday when I was about 18 or something. Somewhere I was too old to go and see that film.
Yeah, and he kind of wanted to.
Johnny Vaughan on some shitty breakfast show said it. I'm glad they made it. So I thought, okay, I'll go and see it today because I've got nothing better to do. And at the time, it was like £3 to go to the cinema if you had no pubes, kind of thing. And I probably had pubes when I was 18, and it was fucking awful.
But it was probably
better than staying at home with my trousers down.
Exactly. Well, maybe it was. I don't know.
But yeah, going back to the new one.
The new one is mint. It got a bad rep. And what pissed me off is the fucking... I think we spoke about this when I saw it. People are like, oh, Michael Bay's not content with ruining Transformers. He's ruined the fucking Turtles as well. It's like, fuck you, man. You don't have a go at Spielberg for Transformers, so don't have a go at Bay for Turtles. And as it turned out, Turtles was pimp.
We've got the Bay Link in early this time.
Well, we've got more Bay to come, so that's fine. But yep. Turtles this year was fucking awesome. They nailed it, and I was happy with it. I'm a big Turtles fan. To be honest, as much as I love Transformers, as a kid, Turtles was my go-to thing.
Right, of course.
That's the thing that I was more invested in as a youth. Okay. I was coveting the rich kids at school and like, oh yeah, we've got all the tells. I'm like, brilliant, nice one. I'll go and see what's in the shop. Fucking April O'Neil with a fucking camera. Nice one. I don't want a toy of her. Bold legged motherfucker. Fuck that shit. So, on the back of the Nickelodeon cartoon, that is awesome. And the new one, I'm very happy with the way that Turtles panned out. Word on the street is that in the new film we're going to get Bebop and Rocksteady.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. And they might throw in Casey Jones. I'd rather have Casey Jones than Bebop and Rocksteady.
Preferably Casey Jones, but I'll go for any of them three. Really. Yeah.
As long as it happens, I'm just happy it exists, man. I'm just happy that it's there.
So it's got the sequel, is it?
It's due out summer 2016, man.
Shit, I'll go and see that. But I like
same summer as Batman and Superman.
I like the fact that they managed to shoehorn a bit of personality into Donatello, which...
Fuck you, man. Donatello's the fucking best, man. Raphael's always a surly knobhead. How can you identify with that guy? Donatello's the best. Mm. Leonardo's the pious kind of, yeah, we're supposed to do the right thing. Michelangelo's a stoner. Donatello's a guy with any character.
He was good in it.
And his NHS glasses were mint.
So I think maybe took Raphael's badassness a bit too far. Because he was a dick, wasn't he?
He was just as much a dick as he was in the original, for my money.
Really?
Yeah. I don't care for Raphael. He can fuck off.
I think over time I've become more of a Leonardo man. Because, you know, I don't know. Don't know why. But Leonardo looked good in it as well. He had the best look, I thought. Although I like Donatello's kind of Jarvis glasses.
Yeah, Donatello looked cool.
And buck teeth. And there's a great... It's kind of an illustrator kind of guy. There's a great intro sequence to it where they really emulate the look of the early comics. You know, it was basically a black and white comic when it began, wasn't it?
They
go for a black and white comic look, which, you know, when you see that on a full size fucking Cineworld screen, and it was only me and two other people in there, which made it even better. You know, over a bag of fucking wine gums. That was. I could have watched 2 hours of that.
Absolutely.
That stuff.
I think people have quibbles with the origin tale. They changed the origin a bit.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't really care too much about that. It didn't really hamper my enjoyment of it. I was like, you fuck with that. I don't buy it. But why would I buy the fact that there's a fucking ninja rat in the sewer who was like a ninja before?
Yeah.
I'm quite happy for a rat to learn to become a ninja. I'm good with that.
I know there's problems with... People had an issue with Shredder as well, didn't they?
Shredder was pimp. I had no beef with Shredder.
He did look... I think he looked better than Shredder's ever looked.
Absolutely.
By a mile.
Yeah.
And anyone with a problem with Shredder probably should check whether their penis or ovaries are intact.
Exactly. Check your genitalia, bitches.
If you've got a rocking cock or some badass ovaries, you would probably appreciate Shredder in that film, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know.
Shredder was mate. No problem with that.
And then been getting into, I jumped on the Amazon Prime wagon accidentally because...
Do you reckon, we like kind of doff our cap in the direction of Netflix and Amazon Prime quite a bit.
Yeah.
How can we go about getting some fat stacks from these motherfuckers? Can we get some representation?
Corporate sponsorship.
Do you reckon they'd be up for some sponsorship?
Need to get more than 100 listeners first, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Although I'm proud of those 100 listeners.
Oh yeah, we appreciate all your listening. Yeah. That's obviously great, but
fucking A. And just give us a shout as well, because you know we want to hear who you are. There's a guy in Mexico signed up for the Facebook page.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sorry I've forgotten your name, but Mexico guy, give us a shout, because can you speak any Spanish?
No, I wouldn't pretend to because it would sound terrible.
So big up Mexico guy.
Also, in terms of shouting out, folk, I think following on from the last podcast where you admitted to your the Cheetah Trouser Massacre where you ruined yourself. Let's give a shout out to Ben March and Williams, who got the fear whilst listening to the last episode, having had a Burger King from a train station. Big shout out to Ben.
Yeah, I'd like to know the result of that situation.
Did you shit yourself, Ben? How was the train journey?
Were the trousers massacred?
Yeah.
During the journey.
Did you get there safely? That's all we want to know.
But yeah, where I was going with that is I've been watching Constantine, which is based on the character, any comic fan, you know, the Hellblazer character. Obviously changed the name because it sounds a lot too much like Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Which I always often wonder what the fuck happened there? Whether they came up with that name first and then it was like, oh shit.
Well, I don't care. They're clearly two different words. I have the mindscape to appreciate Hellraiser and Hellblazer and understand that they are different things.
Hellblazer sounds a bit like some prep dickhead who got sent to hell though, doesn't it? Still wearing his blazer.
Sounds like me when I'm a prefect with still blazer on fire. Yeah. Pick up 10 pieces of litter, motherfucker. Yeah. I was a prefect.
Prefect,
I was a prefect, yeah.
You're looking at head boy, motherfucker. Oh,
you were head boy. Get the fuck out, man. You were never head boy.
I was the worst head boy Notre Dame school ever had. coming out the blazer closet.
Shit, son. You were head boy, fuck me, man.
Yeah, I did a particularly bad job of it as well.
At your school, when you were a prefect or a head boy, could you put like the other, like the like year 10s on litter duty and that kind of shit? What was your power? What power did you wield?
At one point I was asked to get people to police the sick form block. And police? I was just like keep the like younger kids out. Basically like when I was in the younger part of school, I used to sneak in there to use the toilets.
Right.
Because the toilets in the normal school, if you went for a dump there, it was the danger zone, you know, something bad is going to happen. Seriously, shit. Like if the least that would happen are wet towels on your head.
Fucking hell.
The worst would be the door would get kicked in with the trousers down.
That once happened.
And I'm not even joking.
That's dreadful.
So I used to sneak. So I was being asked to police the place where I used to go, which was a bit weird.
Sure.
Anyway, we should talk about something else, really.
Yeah, we should. But can I say that I did enjoy, like, getting
the power trip.
Yeah, when I got a prefect, I was like, why the fuck am I a prefect? I was ruining stuff. But they gave me a prefect. Ship, prefectship? Is that a thing? Prefectship? And as far as I'm honest with it, the only thing that I could wield was to get some kid who was like 11 years old who was giving me shit to pick up 10 pieces of litter. Give him a cardboard box. 10 pieces of litter, son. And he'd go and do it.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, it's a bit ripping yarns, really, I think. Yeah. Fuck it, let's move on.
So I was going to big up Constantine.
Oh, yes.
Which is... Anyway, so Constantine is based on the character John Constantine from the comic Hellblazer. There's no way they could ever fucking adapt that comic properly.
Even the film adaptation was compromised.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've done a really nice job of turning a very fucked up comic into... quite an enjoyable X-Files-y TV show, almost a little bit Doctor Who as well. In
it
ways,
sounds good. I've not seen any of it. I'm bang up for it.
Yeah, if Doctor Who had cock and balls still, that it'd be kind of on a par, I'd say.
Shit. I've not even seen any of them. I've seen two episodes of the last Doctor Who. Who is the only Doctor Who that should really have balls? Because it's Capaldi,
yeah,
man.
I like Capaldi. Yeah,
Capaldi's mint.
Yeah.
And from what I've been hearing, it sounds like he's been neutered.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't really watch enough.
We're not here to talk about Doctor Who, so let's move that aside. Constantine, love the books.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the film with Keanu, it's got a bad rep.
Yeah.
And it's also ace because Shia LaBeouf's in it.
Is he?
Yeah, he's his little mate. He's a taxi driver man with the flat cap.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I don't remember him.
Yeah.
All right.
There's even a reference to Jane Silent Bob in that.
So one thing, like, basically the film, to me, I think it's fair to say it doesn't really adapt the character because it's...
No, you're quite right.
It's, but it, of its own merits, it's enjoyable, like the Stallone Dread, it's fun.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's not shit, but it is entertaining.
Yeah, like if you watch the Stallone Dread thinking this is Demolition Man 2, you'll enjoy it.
Totally, yeah.
And Mega City 1 looks ace in that film anyway.
Mega City
1's
never looked better. It's amazing. Aesthetically, it's a fucking awesome film.
And Max von Sydow's in it. It's got a few... And the guy from Das Boot. I can't remember, Jürgen Prochnow now or whatever.
Yeah, and it's got fucking Hit Me With Your Rimstick dude in it. What's his name?
The guy from
Ian Jury's running a fucking dirty shop with Hammerstein in there.
Shit.
ABC robots, and they're throwing that shit in.
Yeah, it could have been worse, really.
Doff of the cap.
Yeah.
And that's by Danny Cannon, who is currently directing Gotham.
Right, really? Okay. Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah.
It's good. The Stallone Dread is awesome. Well, it's not awesome. It's entertaining. It's good.
It's fun. It's a fun sci-fi.
And the Constantine film is by Francis Lawrence, who did I Am Legend. He did Hunger Games 2.
Right.
He can make an epic beast. And the Keanu Constantine, my only beef with it is the fact that Constantine is a smoker. And yes, smoking is a disgusting habit and blah, blah, blah. And there's a bit where Devil comes in and rips out his cancer and cures him. And it's like, brilliant. And then there's a shot of him on the rooftop and it's like, oh yeah. What's he doing? Oh man, some chewing gum. Fuck off, man. If you've been cured of your cancer from smoking, from your habitual smoking, you are not going to go out and tap a pack of fucking chewing gum to get one out. You're going to have a fat Marlboro.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the very end moment of Constantine is where it lost its balls for me.
Okay.
Prior to that, I thought it was awesome. I thought, the devil shit. Even Gavin Rossdale from Bush Rocks is some sort of demon.
Swallowed.
He's like, finger licking good. And it's like, oh, you dirty bastard. I don't even like it. And you're acting shit. But finger licking good.
One massive credit I'll give that film, for me, that's the best Satan ever.
Yeah. The
guy from Fargo.
Absolutely.
What's his name? I don't know it. You know these things. More bad. We don't know.
We'll come back to it. We've seen him in everything. He's in Fargo. He's a baddie in fucking Prison Break.
He just plays a really filthy devil.
Yeah, he's an excellent devil.
And he shows up in a white soiled suit.
Yeah. Dirty feet.
With dripping tar.
Yeah.
And he comes from above as well, which I thought was nice. Kind of symbolised that he was once an angel who's now fallen.
Yeah.
I'm fallen. If a Catholic loses their way. If you're a Catholic and you don't believe in it anymore, you're fallen. Apparently. I just learnt this. Different religions have different states of faith. Like, say you're a Baptist, you can be agnostic and blah de blah, and it all means you're on a different level of faith. But Catholics, like, you're either on the booze or you're not, kind of thing.
Really?
So you're either devout or you're fallen. So yeah, I'm fallen, like the Dark Lord himself. But Constantine Devil in the film was a high point for me, and he's a filthy soul. And Peter Stormare, very good, nice one,
excellent guy.
And the series does a good job of kind of X-Filesing the comic.
Is he a Scouser?
He's actually Welsh, trying to be Scouse, and he sounds Manc, which I don't mind because
that sounds great.
Yeah, because I thought he was American, so I'm thinking this guy's not done a bad job really. Because you can imagine an American trying to be a Scouser. Some Mike Myers dickhead trying to sound Scottish, you know what I mean?
Speaking of shit accents, this is totally random and off-piste. Have you seen Nymphomaniac?
I've not, no. No.
Right.
I was on trip.
My hero, Shia LaBeouf, is in it.
Yeah.
He's in both parts.
Yeah.
And I think he's trying to play an Englishman.
Yeah.
But he sounds like a South African Dutchman via Australia. And there's a fucking terrible sequence where...
Are you telling me Shia LaBeouf can't act?
I'm telling you, he can't do accents. Shut your mouth.
What about all that sweating he did when he couldn't find his glasses in Transformers?
All he needs to do is run around going, no.
What about his breakdown in Transformers? That was brilliant.
No.
He wrote on the whiteboard and everyone went, oh, what's wrong with this guy? He's going crazy.
He fucking can act. Have you seen Lawless?
He was okay in that.
Yeah,
credit
for
that. Yeah.
And he's fine in Nymphomaniac,
mm-hmm.
But he's trying to play an Englishman, and I'm assuming he is.
Yeah.
But he sounds like an Aussie South African, and it's weird.
Yeah,
and when he says the word fiver, it just sounds weird. There's a terrible sequence where, like, you know, Nymphomaniac was a total misnomer. Like, you had all these portraits, all these promo shots of actors who are in it doing their O faces.
Yeah.
And you had Udo Kier, who is a badass genre actor who's been in loads of stuff. He rocks up in Nymphomaniac as a waiter. He does nothing. He has no sex action.
Yeah.
And he's there in this sequence where Shia LaBeouf essentially offers his woman a fiver for every spoon she can insert. It's fucking terrible. But the way that Shia LaBeouf says the word fiver, it's like, fiver. And it's like, fiver. I'll give you a fiver for everyone that needs you. It's like, stop it. Stop it. It's just dreadful. It's dreadful. Stop this. And it's a good film disregarding the unnecessary shit.
Yeah.
Of which Shia LaBeouf's accent is a prominent part.
I watch anything by Lars von Trier because it's always different and it always leaves me a bit unnerved.
Have you seen Melancholia?
Yeah.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
That stuck with me, that one.
Yeah.
To be honest, really stuck with me.
It's a powerful film, what I found about that is that I don't care for Kirsten Dunst much.
Yeah.
And she was obnoxious as fuck for the first hour and a half. But in the last half hour, and in terms of spoilers, all bets are off. If you've not seen Melancholia by now, stop listening, whatever. The fucking, we know what's happening. For the last half hour of the film.
Well, I suppose they show the start and the end. They show the end at the start, don't they?
Well, I guess you know what's happening.
Yeah.
But the way that her character changes from being fucking annoying to being I'm good with this. Because everyone else is losing their shit. And her depression almost kind of clears, doesn't it?
Yeah,
she's like depressed as fuck. She's having a shit wedding. She's like, what is the fucking point? And she's just morose. And then she accepts what's happening.
Yeah. Sounds like my wedding day. What am I joking?
Sounds like my entire life, man.
I had a great wedding day.
It was a good day, man. It was a good day. Yeah. But there's a low. Melancholy is astonishing. There's a low rumbling in the background. It's like, what the fuck's that?
Yeah.
And people, I think it's a weird one because people think that Melancholy is either boring or it's just annoying. But if you think that, that's fine. Go and watch fucking X Factor because that's what you'd rather be doing. For the few people that watch Melancholy that found it impactful and meaningful, they know. And if you didn't, then fine. I don't really care. Do you know what pisses me off?
Maybe it's a good time to state James has been on his Christmas due today, and are we on 10 hours yet?
So
10 hours,
man.
10 hour session, and he's found the time to do the pod. So hats off to James.
Yeah, I'm full of fine wine and meats and
he's shooting riffs tonight. But I'm playing catch up.
Well, step your game up, motherfucker.
Okay, we've got a song which comes courtesy of an artist called Murkbox, aka John Gray Vogel. John is based in Ohio. He's into his horrorcore, into his electro, and cool synth stuff. And cheers for letting us play this, John. I saw it on Graveyard Calling. .com, which has plenty of Murkbox stuff on there, along with things like we previously played Werewolves of Siberia, and it's got all the stuff on there. It's great, go and check it out. Okay, in 2015, Murkbox put in an album out quite early on in the year, and it's called Friday Night Ghoul, so look out for that. You can find Murkbox's music on murkbox.bandcamp.com, or as I said before, on graveyardcalling.com. Also worth mentioning, John has another project. It's a retro-80s synth side project, and it's called Vector Sector, so check that out as well. So thanks again, John, and this next song is called Kris Kringle Killer.
Killer. if you're bad boys and girls, your name goes in the bad boys and girls book, and I'll bring you something horrible.
I have something for you.
Anyone dressed as Santa Claus.
Okay, I've got a shout out to Paul Koop. Paul Koop is a. Do you know Paul Koop?
No.
You don't know Paul Koop? No, he's
Paul Koop.
Anyone who's anyone knows Paul Koop.
Well, I'm clearly nobody.
He's a Sheffield man with a. He's got a finely crafted beard.
I don't give a fuck.
And he listens. He's one of our finest listeners, and I did this talk to the women of the Seven Hills Women's Institute, who are like a trendy women's institute in Sheffield.
Okay.
And nice bunch of ladies got me down to do this talk about my illustrations, which sorry to pat myself on the back there.
Are you an illustrator, Jim?
But so anyway, Paul Koop's partner is called Di, and she was there.
Okay.
And because Coop listens to the podcast, he was said to die.
You don't have to justify it to me, man.
He said to die. Ask him about the Cheadle Trouser Massacre, where I'm basically stood in front of 60 women I don't know. So thanks. Cheers for that. Cheers for that, Paul. And cheers to die for not doing that to me.
I got to say, nice one, Coop, for suggesting that.
Good call. And big up the Seven Hills women. Kirsty got me involved, and a nice lady called Anna looked after me, and I got to try various they'd made these Henderson's relish themed delicacies, and one lady
did they all taste exactly the same?
No, they were out there. One was like a pork pie with Henderson's relish in the cheese, and you would have fucking loved it.
Okay.
And the one that won was sorry, I've forgotten her name, but one lady did. She pulled out the caviar. Henderson's relish caviar.
Really?
On these beautiful pancakes.
Ooh.
I think they're pancakes. And
were they like tiny?
They were quite small, but
so blinis.
Yeah, but they were blinis. they were really, really fucking nice.
That sounds delicious.
So I felt I had to get that.
Hendo's caviar.
Yeah.
These fucking details, they'll put that shit on anything, won't they?
Outrage.
For our global listeners, Henderson's Relish is essentially a glorified Worcestershire sauce.
Oh, outrageous.
And that's
outrageous.
A science fact.
And many
they are quite different, to be fair. However, they can be applied in the same manner. So I'm going to go with that. It's not disrespect. I only buy Hendo's, to be fair. I don't even buy Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah.
I buy Hendo's and I use it in all my cooking, and it's a delicious relish.
It's excellent.
When you're sauteing some onions and peppers and garlic, throwing some Hendo's in there, it's fucking mint. Turn it to tomato sauce.
Yeah.
But I won't put it on my fucking chips, despite what chippies round here insist that that's appropriate. I don't think it is. I wouldn't put Worcestershire sauce on chips, so I'm not going to put Hendo's on it either.
Yeah, it don't really work with chips, does it? Like pie, it's great. It's great.
Oh, it's finer on pie.
I've actually, because my lovely wife Melissa, and she's mainly veggie, so Hendo's has saved me from many a kind of shit.
Well, I think Hendo's is actually veggie anyway. Hmm. But I think
it's vegan. It's technically vegan. Yeah,
fucking
hell. Yeah.
I think Worcestershire sauce used to have anchovies in it.
Right.
Maybe that's why it tastes better.
Oh,
that is a far better outrageous. And a far superior relish
outrageous.
Than this fucking homemade wank.
Outrageous.
Yeah, well, whatever.
I bet you're the kind of man that would do a Henderson's relish themed art print and then take a job from Worcestershire College doing a big mural.
I would absolutely do that, and it would be very easy because I clearly already done one on Hendo's and just have to change the fucking logo.
Yeah, it was a big sellout. Yeah, anyway.
Let's talk about
Interstellar. We're not going to ruin it because it's still in the cinema, so I don't think we've got any right to spoil the film for anyone.
Interstellar is one of the strongest films for
definitely,
me.
Definitely, yeah.
I had high hopes, and then I sat down in the cinema and there was some cunt
sat across the aisle. There's a fucking surprise, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you ever encountered a man eating a fucking apple in the cinema? Have you?
No,
I haven't.
No.
Until this prick. And he was cocksure. I was looking out the corner of my eye and he was there with his fucking pork pie face. And he was like, yeah, I'm eating an apple in the cinema. I'm like, don't eat an apple in the fucking cinema.
Yeah.
You terrible cunt. I've said that twice now. I might say it again. But luckily, the apple only lasted for the first 25 minutes of the film. And fortunately, the film is 3 years long, so you're good. You're good. There's plenty of time to catch up. I fucking loved Interstellar. I think McConaughey, we've got post-True Detective McConaughey, and we're all loving McConaughey. Everyone is loving him.
Yeah, he's back. For me, he's only done a handful of things, because for me, there was Dazed and Confused and Reign of Fire, where he basically plays a badass kind of Hulk Hogan-style character.
Yeah.
And then
Bangers Dragon Killer.
And then he was kind of dead for about a decade or longer. And
now he's to launch. You get the fuck out, son.
He planned a few weddings.
Yeah.
And although he's still making shitty perfume adverts and stuff.
Well, he can make perfume adverts, man. Marilyn Manson makes perfume adverts. That's fine. He's got the bone structure for it. Some dude's going to photograph him in a nice way, I'm good with that.
Fuck
me, man. True Detective.
Yeah. It was solid.
TV show of the fucking year, hands down, right?
Yeah,
I've not seen anything since then that has moved me in such a way.
Finale to Breaking Bad was good. One thing I want to say about Interstellar is part of the reason I left it so I only saw it yesterday. It's been out 6 weeks. It must have done pretty well. It's done cinema after 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Nolan had this quite brash quote in some magazine saying, "Oh, since the '70s." Everything's basically been influenced by Alien. There's nothing else. There's no positivity out there. And I thought, what a dickhead. I'm not going to go and see this now. I went to see it. I can sort of see what he's on about now, because he's kind of right. Because there's the odd film like Mission to Mars, which is a bag of shit. But it's basically Mission to Mars, but not shit. It's kind of an existential, like, from the era where hippies wanted space travel to be more about exploration and discovery and enlightenment for the human race.
Well, we're in solid running surf there, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, but again, that's dystopian, isn't it? It's kind of a, for me, it was like a real fuck you to the cynics, but in, which is weird because I think Nolan's done a lot to stoke the fires of the cynics because, you know, Superman's not allowed a blue outfit anymore, is he?
Well, that's
in, in this world, and that's kind of Nolan's fault.
I don't care. I really don't, I don't give a shit. Why, about I care. I could not give less than a fuck.
Why can't I have a blue Superman?
It is fucking
blue. We've
got
a blue and red Spider-Man.
Well, that's Marvel. They're all quite happy with their fucking Power Rangers having their adventures, whatever.
Got raccoons having a good time. What's your problem?
So
why can't we have a, anyway? But yeah, it was really interesting, and it felt like it, for me, it felt like Nolan's been hitting the fucking Grant Morrison hard. You know what I'm saying?
You reckon he's gone a bit philosophical? He's having vision quests.
Yeah,
in the desert and shit.
I'm not going to ruin anything of that film because I want everyone to enjoy it, but definite, if you're not a comic man, you won't know what the fuck we're on about, but anyone who appreciates Interstellar should hit the Grant Morrison hard.
I think
ASAP.
I think we should. I'd like to give a shout out to regular listener Martin, who went to see Interstellar, then went to see it again in IMAX, and then went to fucking Thailand or Singapore or whatever, and went to see it again whilst he was over there.
Right.
And he was like, "This is an awesome film."
And he
sings its praises. He's got a big boner for Chris Nolan, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I watched Interstellar and I was moved to tears repeatedly. It's a long film. It's a proper fucking bladder test.
I pissed four pisses during it.
I didn't have any, and then I went out. And I had like a 5-minute piss and walked away and thought, there's more in the tank then. But I've got to drive to go home. I've got to go home. And by the time I got home, I was dying for another piss. It's a long fucking movie.
I think it did merit the 3 hours though.
I don't think there's any flab in there. It's not a flabby film. But what is important about Interstellar for me is the fact that, to be fair, I don't know what is important about it. It's just fucking awesome. It's touching in a way that you didn't think a sci-fi about. Oh, the fucking world is overpopulated, which is actually a thing that we've never covered on The Beast. We've actually covered about my issue about overpopulation. Interstellar deals with it.
Let's not bring my daughter into this.
Well, she didn't ask to be born. I didn't ask for her to be born. But that's not the case. That's not the issue here.
I reckon McVeigh's just a big Jaffa.
A Jaffa.
Seedless orange.
Oh shit, son!
I'm joking.
Fuck
anyway,
you.
But basically, Interstellar gets my vote. For me, Moon's still my favourite recent, you know, thought provoking sci-fi.
Moon is prime existentialism.
Yeah.
Business.
Great flick, really great, but Interstellar comes a good second to that one for me.
Yeah,
and yeah, I like it's just got a nice positive vibe to it, even though it doesn't seem like it. But it kind of, when I came out, I was like, it made me feel good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So
because what you're seeing, it's quite hard to talk about Interstellar without spoiling it, but it is enriching, I'd say.
Yeah.
Let's say if you watch Interstellar, you'll be like, I really need a piss, but I am quite happy.
Yeah, like watching Interstellar is much better than getting into Stella Artois, basically.
Unless if
you're one of two kinds of people in my mind.
You're either Interstellar or you're Interstellar.
Exactly. So avoid chemical fueled violence inducing beers that get you banned from the forum in Sheffield.
Ugh. Or any other reputable venues. Or your own house.
See, Stella did literally get me banned from the forum once.
Good work.
Although I went in the following week, no one seemed to care.
Shout out to the forum.
I've been watching a retro show I just want to give a really quick shout out to. It's because I got my friend Jez, just him, who's a listener.
He
recently was looking for a kick-ass show to get into, and he'd never seen The Wire, so I said, well, why don't you give The Wire a shot then? So yeah, so I looked up David Simon, whose book inspired The Wire, and it turned out that there was a link with Homicide: Life on the Street, which was a cop show watched as a teenager, and so decided to take the punt on the first series. Fucking loved it. It's a bit like if The Wire's, say, in album terms, was Nevermind. Homicide's a bit like Bleach, you know what I mean? It's like kind of your raw nerve, and there's kind of it's very much a cop show. There's no kind of, they don't follow someone like Bubbles around, you know what I mean? There's that kind of glimpse of the genius there, you know what I mean? There's that understanding of reality rather than just we gotta get the fucking bad guys and shoot out every episode like Sons of Anarchy or whatever, you know. Not, you know, it's all shit. Mopey's wearing his fucking Sam Crow t-shirt as I say that.
Fuck yourself, man.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's a fun show. That's a fun show. Really got into Homicide watching it at the minute. And Yaphet Kota's in it, and Ned Beatty, you know. Yeah.
Isn't Deliverance. Isn't John Polito in it as well?
John Polito, alright, is he?
John Polito, he's the guy who runs the shop in The Crow. Well, fucking short, bald man with a shit tash. He's like, piss off, we're closed.
He was in series one, and then sadly he leaves pretty quickly because he hits Hollywood in style because he's really good. And his partner calls him, what's he call him? The Salami. Because he's so Italian. I can imagine if you've got a Wire hangover, if you've just watched The Wire and you're itching for something to follow it, that would be perfect. Because it's not The Wire, it's not as good as that. It's got no Omar and stuff in it, but it's pretty fucking good. And it looks like everybody did pretty well out of it as well, because there's loads of faces you'd recognise.
Yeah.
And one guy, Munch, one of the main detectives, even shows up in The Wire.
Doesn't he hold a record for being the most dude who's appeared in the most fucking TV shows?
Really?
He appears in Law and Order and everything.
Really?
Yeah, he plays the same dude in a lot of stuff. It's actually like, it's recognised that he is the same dude. So it means that Law and Order is set in the same universe as The Wire.
Right.
And Homicide.
So Munch is a badass.
Munch is cool.
Munch steals every scene for me, and it's the funniest thing is I just watched the episode where Munch and his mates buy a bar and set this bar up, and then in his cameo in The Wire he's basically arguing with the barman about his bar tab and saying, you know, I used to run a bar. And the guy who walks in the bar was one of his partners in the bar, but he's now in The Wire as the main newspaper editor. I can't remember the actor's name, but one of the main detectives.
That's the dude who directed a load of the earlier stuff.
Really?
Yeah, he's a director. I can't remember his name.
The earlier Wire kind of stuff.
Yeah, and is it series 4 or 5?
Yes, last season of The Wire. Yeah.
We can check it out. We'll carry on talking, but that guy was responsible for a lot of strong Wire and the same business.
So big up the guy whose name we can't remember.
We'll find it. God, carry on talking.
So yeah, so it's Christmas week.
Hang on. So we're trying to do a roundup of the year.
Yeah.
Talking about an old TV show.
From the '90s.
Yeah. But that's fine. Okay, so talking on Homicide and The Wire, the guy we were looking after was Clark Johnson, who's a director and actor. He was in all 7 seasons of he was in all of Homicide, but he also played the scruple based journalist dude who ran the press desk in the final series of The Wire, and he was awesome. And
you were saying The Wire is now HD.
Oh yeah, The Wire is HD. Yep. And if people, because it was obviously when it started airing, The Wire, it was like 2005, 2006. When people had normal tellies. So it was actually shot to be projected on that. So it was like 4x3 pan.
I think The Wire in America went back to 2001 or something crazy.
Okay.
It's proper old, yeah.
All right.
So we got it way late
humour
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
My point is that The Wire early days was projected
yeah.
basically
yeah.
like people with shit tellies.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
like everyone had at the time.
So you had recently.
Oh.
Sorry. R.I.P. the real McVeigh. What's it? Real CRT McVision.
CRT McVeigh. Yeah, if anyone cares, I don't know why you would, but it's only recently, in the past, like literally the past 2 months, that I've acquired an HD TV.
Yeah.
So that's fixed me up big time.
Actually,
I can buy Blu-rays now.
It put a deep sadness in my heart. It was as if you'd suddenly decided Transformers was shit or something. It's kind of, you know, the whole conversational point was over.
Let me assure you, Jim, that was not the case. However, going back to The Wire. The Wire is going to be available in HD from summer next year, but it's airing in the States on HDTV from Christmas.
Yeah.
And David Simon has posted a thing on his blog about how that the HD conversion has worked in good ways and bad ways, and he's done a comparison.
Yeah.
And if you've not seen The Wire by now, there are no spoilers. Spoilers are off the fucking chart here. Series 2, Frank Sobotka has snuffed it.
Yeah.
And David Simon has posted a video of the original one with the pan and scan black bars at the side of the screen.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, that's very sad. But when you put it in fucking full HD badass vision, it adds more gravitas to it.
Okay.
And they're pulling him out. And then he puts another shot where I think D'Angelo Barksdale is having a meet with a drug dude, and he's in front of a chicken shack, and it's all dark at night, neon lights. And D'Angelo and his mate at the centre of the screen. When you put it in badass Blu-ray HD badness, you've essentially got more background.
Right.
And it's just essentially they're still the centre of the screen, but
lost its focus.
There's nothing else there. There's just, you can see more signage, basically.
Yeah.
You can see the name of the chicken shack. It's like, ooh, that adds to it.
Hmm.
So David Simon's gone on record as saying that the conversion to HD has been a good thing, as much as it's not been a bad thing, but it hasn't improved anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But where it can improve it, it has improved it.
Because one thing I really like about Homicide is it's shot on very cheap looking dirty film.
Yeah,
which gives it a real grit.
Well, that's early doors Wire, isn't it?
Right. Okay. Right.
I like watching. Have you seen Crime Story?
No.
It was a show that Michael Mann did following Miami Vice.
Right, Michael
Mann was a showrunner on Miami Vice,
yeah.
And he then got a chance to do another new show in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it was a gangster thing set in the 50s. Dennis Farina was in it.
Okay.
And
set in the 50s?
Set in the 50s. It's got Del Shannon doing the soundtrack.
That must have been hard to pull off with a TV budget in the 80s.
Yeah. So it was I think it was like mid. Let's go with mid 80s. Miami Vice had finished. Michael Mann had walked from it at least, because Michael Mann wasn't involved in the last days of Miami Vice because it went a bit shit.
I like Michael Mann,
but I've still watched every episode of Miami Vice. Who else can say that, motherfuckers? I don't know anyone who has seen every episode of Miami Vice. And if you're listening to this, announce yourselves. Because I like to discuss Miami Vice with you, because it's a fucking strong show. It gets a bad rep. People think it's some Dayglow 80s fucking wank with espadrilles and alligators, but it's dark as fuck. It's as dark as The Wire, and people think it's just shit. But back on topic.
What about my Miami Vice themed beer beer pump? I should get that in there. Just done a beer for Kilimanjaro called Miami Pale Ale with a Miami Vice GTA theme. Grand Thirst Alleviation.
Grand Thirst Alleviation, nice.
Terrible. I spent all day thinking about a good acronym and failed miserably there.
Yeah, I don't care for it, Jim, to be honest. But if I can get back on topic, Crime Story was what Michael Mann was given, and it had Dennis Farina and a bunch of actors you will have seen the shit out of. They've gone on to better things, but it was essentially a 50s, 60s set gangster TV show, essentially Miami Vice badness. In the 50s, it lasted two seasons, and it's mint as fuck.
So we're doing pretty well with a festive theme here, aren't we?
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Let's just throw in Merry Christmas every now and then. Yeah, fuck it. Yeah, Merry Christmas. Let's watch Gremlins.
What are you gonna? What? Okay, you told me you watched Batman Returns the other night.
I watched Batman Returns.
Christmas
the other night.
Theme film.
Very festive.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, Alfred. Merry Christmas, Mr. Wayne. That's brilliant.
Batmobile driving on fresh snow felt good.
To be fair, aesthetically, Batman Returns seemed like a new film to me.
Yeah,
I watched it years ago and I haven't seen it in time. And I watched it and I thought, this is fucking amazing. I'm going to say I enjoyed it more than the original. With Keaton in.
I think as a Burton fan, I appreciate the fact it is a Burton film. You know what I mean? Which I think the first one kind of isn't, is it? It's not what we know as a Tim Burton film.
No, absolutely not.
It's Tim
Burton
making a Batman film.
It's still Burton finding his Burtonness, if you want.
So you could say the 89, that's Burton making a Batman film, basically. Yeah. Whereas Batman Returns is a Burton film with Batman in it.
Yes.
It's the Batman film he wanted to make,
which
is fucking bizarre. And I enjoyed watching it again recently. As a teenager, I didn't get it at all, but it does. I realised it looked amazing, but that kind of twee humour that Burton employs was way more evident. And without Jack Nicholson, I felt that it wasn't much of a seller for me. But I liked it. You know what I mean? It was. And,
I agree with you, and I think Nicholson as a youth made it obvious. Whereas with the passage of time.
Yeah.
Watching it again with the double bill of Walken and Danny DeVito banging off each other, it's fucking amazing. it's insane. Walken is off the map and Danny DeVito is such a pervy little motherfucker. I totally forgotten how fucking dirty he was. It's an insane film, and Michelle Pfeiffer was 34 at the time.
Right.
And I'm 34 now, so
she's a youth compared to our women.
I know. Oh, no, but they're not going to listen to it, so. Yes, she is.
I'll cut that out. One question I've still got is why he decided to put Penguin in a fucking soiled baby growth in 70% of the film. Still seems a strange move to me.
He was wearing a nice overcoat over it. Maybe it was comfortable.
It's like when he turns around, he's got like a dirty ass.
He's got a shit ass, haven't he? With just bulging piles hanging out.
Like he's had a chewed off trouser masker.
Also, Christopher Walken's character, Max Schreck, his son is like some weird fucking bodybuilding dude with a ridiculous jaw called Chip.
Chip? Who's called Chip?
His son is called Chip. It's like, why would you ever call your child Chip? Even if I don't want a child, but if I had one, I would not call it Chip.
Maybe in America, Chip's kind of a like being called Dave or something, you know? It's kind of not such a bad name.
Maybe, but is it short for Charles or something?
Yeah, Chip. What the fuck's that?
Yeah, it's dog shit.
But,
and also, Batman Returns is awesome, but it has the worst Batman movie theme ever. Susie and the Banshees.
Oh, Jesus. We don't even need to discuss that.
Yeah, listen to it on your own time.
I've got a good link. Okay.
What's your link?
Burton Batman, Danny Elfman. Danny Elfman scored Scrooged, which is my Christmas plug.
Every Christmas time.
If there's one film I watch at Christmas, it's Scrooged. It's almost like Ghostbusters for Christmas.
It's excellent.
You know,
exactly.
Bill Murray melts down.
Has it got Tom Waits in it? Tom Waits is in that shit.
I think so. Yeah.
And it's got the dude from Police Academy.
What's his name? Oh, it's
bad.
Something cat. Bobcat. Bobcat.
Bobcat
like.
Goldthwait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who makes? Oh no!
So like McVeigh and another five drinks.
Ah, nice bike, but you're putting batteries. It's fucking awesome. Yeah, please get him before. That's where he reared his head. Excellent.
I was going to get the quote from Bill Murray and read it during this podcast. I thought it'd be a nice kind of pensive kind of pertinent ending to the Christmas kind of episode, but I never did it.
Why don't you do it?
I suppose I still could.
You totally could.
No, I'm not going to now.
No, do it and then say blah 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 bullshit editing. Here's the thing.
We were going to do our films of the year, that stuff. Maybe we should leave that till the next episode and do like a round up of this year in just, you know. What do you reckon?
I think we should talk about it.
Okay.
I think we should do it.
What about your Xmas viewing though? What are you gonna watch over Christmas? Do you think Snowman?
No, I'm not gonna watch the fucking Snowman, man. It's dog shit. I intend to watch Die Hard.
Okay.
I intend to watch Scrooged. I intend to watch Trading Places, which isn't actually a Christmas film, but it culminates at Christmas.
Okay. Yeah.
I intend to watch the Alistair Sim Scrooge.
The what, sorry?
Alistair Sim.
Is that the 30s version or something?
I think it's like 40s, 50s.
Okay, yeah.
It's either called Scrooge or Christmas.
That's the classic,
Carol.
Classic.
Yeah, it's like the good one.
Have you seen the one with McNulty in it, with Dominic West?
Yeah.
It's got, Professor X.
The one with Patrick Stewart in.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart.
Is McNulty in that?
And McNulty's his nephew. Really? Dominic West is Fred.
Of course he is. I can picture that. He's a fucking... He can do simpering twat very well, that guy.
It's a really good version. And it was only a TV film. But yeah. I've got some...
I think my dad has it in a cardboard sleeve that came free with the Daily Mail.
Yeah. That's just, I don't read the Daily Mail. But
my dad does.
I somehow got hold of the Daily Mail version. Fuck knows how that happened.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
But it's good. And...
Christmas wise, I'm looking forward to more Home Alone, and also I'm going to watch Eyes Wide Shut. I'm going to see if I can get my woman to watch Eyes Wide Shut on Christmas Day. I don't feel that I'm going to be successful, but it is a Christmas film.
Eyes Wide Shut,
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, good.
Tom Cruise mincing about Manhattan, furious that his woman had designs on another man, so he's going to go out and revenge, not shag anyone. It's a crazy film. Eyes Wide Shut is an amazing film that gets better with each viewing, and it got a bad rep, but it is one of Stanley Kubrick's finest fucking hours.
It is a good film. Yeah, it's a good film.
It's awesome. And we've not spoken about Cruise much, actually.
I like around that period he did a couple of good ones. There was one, me and a friend on John, shout out to on John, we went to see Magnolia.
Magnolia is good.
When there used to be a cinema at the G-Max in Manchester, which has now got some shit name. We went on a Saturday night and there was nobody else there at this cinema. It was like, where the fuck is everybody? That's probably why there's not a cinema there anymore. So basically sat in the cinema with me and Anjan watching Magnolia on this huge screen.
Good.
And Cruise was pretty decent in that.
Cruise is amazing in that.
He plays a complete arsehole.
Yeah.
Which was probably pretty well cast.
Yeah. I think Cruise is ace. I will watch anything with Cruise in.
I tried to watch that Jack Reacher shit.
Jack Reacher.
Within 5 minutes, three women were like kind of winking at him, going, "Ooh, hello."
Jack Reacher's reaching.
It was painful.
It's based on a very successful.
Yeah, that
dude. Like literary dude, a literary character that a lot of millions of people who care about.
Yeah,
they're like, I've bought this guy's books, I love this guy, and then he's supposed to be 6 foot plus badass.
It's something they should have got an actor to do, really.
No, I disagree. It's something they should have got a taller actor to do. Cruise is ace.
You're Michael Shannon kind of guy.
Yeah, absolutely, a Michael Shannon kind of guy, someone with stature. I love Cruise, but he was miscast in that. But he wasn't miscast in Magnolia. He wasn't miscast in Vanilla Sky. He wasn't miscast in any of the Mission Impossible films. Mission Impossible 4 is fucking mint.
Ghost Protocol. Is that the one?
Yeah, it's fucking excellent, that film.
I still didn't see it, actually.
What? Why?
It's got Tom Cruise in it. Sorry.
Have you seen the other Mission Impossibles?
I liked the second one.
The John Woo Dove Wank Fest.
John Woo.
Oh, yeah. Mission... Tom Cruise is going to jump. Let's throw some doves there.
When Tom Cruise is jumping across rocks,
Mission Impossible 2
we're supposed
is the
to believe
worst.
He actually did it when he blatantly didn't.
No. Tom Cruise does it. That's the point, man.
Well, he risks his life jumping across rocks.
He does
rocks.
It every fucking time. If you watch Ghost Protocol, he's on the fucking... I'm drunk because I've been out all day. The massive hotel in Dubai that's one of the tallest buildings in the world.
Yeah.
He is actually climbing out on the side of that motherfucker, abseiling, doing his action scene.
So he basically leans out of a window.
No, it's worse than that, man. He actually puts himself in the danger zone. Mission Impossible 5 is filming now, right? Under the direction of the guy who did the Jack Reacher film.
Okay.
And I'm seeing pictures of him strapped to the side of a fucking plane. Even going back to Mission Impossible 2, when he's hanging on that rock, John Woo had to fucking fend off the insurance people and tell them that Tom Cruise was not doing that. Because he was fucking doing it. Tom Cruise, despite what you think about him as a human being, as a crazy Scientologist with his magic fucking trainers.
I don't mind saying, you know, believe in whatever you want for my money.
Yeah, believe in what you want. But fucking a dude from the 50s who invented a religion is going to cut it a bit less. But however, you know, make millions, Bob. Tom Cruise does his own stunts all the way back to Mission Impossible 2, which is 2000 now, right? Yeah. That scene when he's hanging on that fucking cliff. That is Tom Cruise hanging on the fucking cliff, and the insurance people are shitting in their pants.
Really?
And John Woo's getting a fucking call. It's like, what the fuck is happening here? We've got a multi-million dollar dude hanging off a rock.
Okay.
Mission Impossible 5, four films down the line, he's hanging off the side of a fucking jumbo jet. Like, yeah, dude, check me out. Despite what Cruise does, watch him in something like Eyes Wide Shut or Interview with a Vampire. He's got character as fuck.
Vanilla Sky.
Have you seen Vanilla Sky?
I liked it, yeah. I liked it. It was good. It's good soundtrack as well. Ended up buying the soundtrack.
I think Vanilla Sky is
sung by Looper.
I reckon we should try and slide some of that into this shitcast. But Cruise treads a fine line between being a fucking awesome badass and being a fucking weirdo. And when he's a badass, he's actually bringing it. He does his own stunts, and Ghost Protocol, it's the Burj Khalifa. There's a scene, I remember watching it distinctly in IMAX, and it was the first live action film by Brad Bird, who made The Incredibles.
Oh, really?
Which is the best Pixar film ever.
Yeah, it's good. It's very. It's my favourite. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. We're on the same page, bro. The beast meets.
Yeah.
The beast meets.
Remind me about Credibles in a minute. Okay.
But there's a shot in Ghost Protocol where the window has come out and he's on the Burj Khalifa, and he has to walk out. And I remember in IMAX, it was like it beat all the 3D films I'd ever seen. I was like, this is filling my vision, and I've got brown trousers because he's just stepping out of a fucking.
And trousers should be down, surely. And pants should be flying.
Not when you're stepping out of a fucking 400th floor window. And Cruise just steps out and it's like, that's alright, I've got some wires. Simon Pegg's in the background. Like, it's alright, mate. I've got you on this lead. And he's like, oh, nice one. So he clambers along. And then you see an exterior shot taken from a helicopter, and it's clearly Cruise on the side of the fucking building.
Right.
It's fucking insane.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you that.
And that's why he goes up in estimation. I can forgive him dancing on a couch, on Oprah's couch, because he's putting off his face and he's changed his medication. But I got nothing but respect for Cruise, man.
If we are bigging up Cruise, let's get real. Cocktail. That's a serious film.
Shit, son. I think we should go Top Gun on this.
And there's also, I've been to the place where they shot that. You know where. He went through a phase of calling himself fucking Mulligan or whatever, giving himself an Irish name.
Did he?
Yeah, and he shot some film in Ireland with Nicole Kidman, and another great Irish girl from Australia.
Is that
Australia.
Far and away?
Yeah,
yeah. Where Ron Howard.
I've been to the place
he
where...
He was a fist fighter. He was a bare knuckle puncher, so he was. Come on.
my uncle Jerome's got holiday home next to... where they shot Far and Away, and they built some fake village on this beautiful, really beautiful place.
I really enjoyed Far and Away.
I've never seen it, but and it's also shot in the same place as there's an old film called Ryan's Daughter, which is, you know, it's a proper film, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's a classic.
Yeah.
That's if you ever go to, if any listeners ever find themselves in Ireland, go down to Dingle itself. For me, I thought it was pretty shit, but around the corner there's a beautiful peninsula where fucking great little boozer and the most amazing views you've ever seen. It looks like looks like something out of a fucking fantasy art drawing. And there's an island which translates to something like Dead Man Island. Well, it's like sacrilege to call it Dead Man Island, but that's basically the what it means. And there's some like wild birds and these like small group of like cultish monks on it and stuff.
Wow.
And that's all sort of Ryan's daughter, far away country kind of thing. And apparently, this made me laugh, my uncle told me the Cranberries, there was this amazing looking like modern kind of, you know, like in Grand Designs someone builds the Big Brother house in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
it was like that but 10 times better. There was a house like that on this kind of peninsula. I was like, fuck, you just to my uncle, well, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? And he's like, yeah, the Cranberries bought that in the 90s and they had that built, actually. I think they had it built anyway, because, but the locals, they all thought they were fucking up themselves, you know. The locals didn't like them, so they ended up fucking moving away. Cranberries got chased out of this peninsula for being wankers. So yeah, credit to the Dingle Massive. Although I don't mind the Cranberries, you know.
Band.
Yeah, they've been pretty quiet for a while, though, haven't they?
Yeah, I've not heard much from the Cranberries in years.
You'd think you'd at least hear a solo album from the singer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They hit hard with about 4 or 5 singles, didn't they?
20 years ago. Actually, thinking about it, 20 years ago.
How come the singer never did the rounds? That's weird, isn't it?
I think she got shitted up on Magic Pop. I don't know.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, she's got a drink problem or something.
I don't know. Can we say it? I don't know. But yeah, Zombie was a good song. Linger.
Yeah, you have to let it linger.
But
yeah.
Zombie was better, I think.
But apparently they all lived in one house, according to my uncle. He might have had his facts wrong. But, so it's probably dead exciting for people who tune in for a festive special, isn't it?
Exactly, this is really festive, man. Basically, watch Die Hard, watch Home Alone, watch Scrooged, Merry Christmas. We'll see you later. We enjoyed watching films this year.
Yeah. Should we go for a fag?
Let's have a fag.
Okay, apologies for the lack of Christmas in our supposed festive episode. There is a second part which will be out very shortly, in which McVeigh proceeds to get even more hammered and slurry than he was in the first part. Worth checking out just for that. Culminates in McVeigh believes that he could get his legal clearance for the playing of a Verve track. Right, I'm going to end with a song that's long overdue. The Meat for the Beast theme tune is an extract from an old Ape Drape Escape song, which is a band I was in many moons ago for a couple of years. I left and a guy called Dan replaced me on drums. It's the band of my friend James Bonsall, who plays the character Terry in Friends of Batman, my band. And this is, sadly, the Ape Drapes no longer around. But there's often talk of a reunion, which would be fucking excellent if that ever happened. And this is one of the later tracks when, for me, they really started to peak. And it's called Broke My Hip to the Beat. So cheers to the 8 Drapes for letting us play this, and also for the intro sample, which I think's ace. So have a good Christmas, everyone, and check out the second part, which will be out soon.
Get in on that. By the time